Welcome to the Ignite Physio Podcast. This podcast inspires physiotherapists and other health professionals to continue learning and growing in their practice and career. We explore professional issues with a fresh lens and delve into topics that help to expand our capacity for growth. This is episode number 52, and I'm Andrew.
And I'm Maxie.
All right. Well, Maxie, today we are live in person again.
Last time we were recording remotely,
which had its challenges.
Yeah, and it's never the best experience.
No, face to face is always better.
Yeah.
So today we have a guest on the show, Glenda Lane. She's a fellow physiotherapist from Edmonton. So she's been practicing for 28 years, and about 8 years ago, she was started to do life coaching to help other therapists overcome burnout. So welcome, Glenda.
Thank you. Really pleased to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to continue the conversation that we've had around burnout. We've done a couple episodes. Episode 46 was on burnout. Episode 49 was on self-care. Mm-hmm. Back last fall, I did a webinar for Ignite members on burnout and the whole topic of career alignment. So I feel like we've touched on the topic, but I think it's always good to get fresh perspective.
Absolutely. And for somebody who's also actively thinking about it and trying to inject some ways of addressing.
Yeah.
Other than you and I kind of, you know, saying, well, that's what I do.
Well, and I think it's one of those topics that is often not talked about. And I think therapists are, and I think really any health professional, but therapists, when we're spending a lot of time with people one-on-one, you know, I think it's something that we often will fail to talk about and really aren't well equipped to address.
Right.
And so, Glenda, it's great to have you on the show today. And so we're excited to hear a little bit about your professional journey. We really hope that other physiotherapists and clinicians can, you know, glean some insights and, you know, learn from your journey. And so just thought if you could share with our listeners a little bit about your clinical background and what kind of setting you currently work in.
Sure. So I am a McGill grad from, oh my goodness, 91, you guys. Like, feel
don't
really
count,
old.
Don't count the number of years.
Yeah, it's almost 29,
right? It's not that long ago.
I know. So after graduating from McGill, I worked in Ottawa at the General Hospital there, acute care, for a year and a half. And so I moved to Edmonton in 93. I worked at Kinsman Sports Center Physical Therapy for, I think it was about 16 years.
Was I there when you were there?
Yeah.
Yes.
I do believe so, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that was what?
Or was it, or no, maybe it was just after I left.
It's not that long ago.
I know, but it's a bit blurry. Because I know that you were in the class that I TA'd at the university.
That's right.
So I'm thinking that's the first time we met.
Yes.
And I'm trying to, you know what, I don't think I was there. I think I had just left.
It was in 2010.
Okay, so yes, I was not there.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was after.
But your ships crossed.
Yes.
You crossed paths more in the educational setting.
Yeah, that's where we first met.
Yeah. So. And where did you and I first
Maxie,
meet?
Maxie, I was trying to figure that out.
It was like eons ago.
Probably pretty soon after I moved here, maybe. And I can't remember actually if we met, or if it was more like I knew who you were, you knew who I was, and we might have had a conversation at some, like, over the it's not clear.
Well, and also, like, I milled into as a patient into Kinsman.
Yes,
so
right.
I may have even seen you as
so
a therapist
possibly
as a patient.
Yes, that's right. Possible too.
Yeah.
And then just knowing, of course, being at the U and
and
having friends there that are profs and also TAing there. So who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a while.
But yeah, the web.
The web. Yeah. Yeah. So I was there for 16 years and then I actually left the profession. So I'll tell you a little more about that, but I actually left. And then I had kids. And so I've been working very part-time in the last 10 years as a physio and several different clinics. And I'm currently at Cura in the West End, and there a couple of days a week. So, yeah. And then in that time as well, I started doing my training for, I'm going to say life coaching, but it was very specific towards energy, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So energy is kind of my jam, and took 2-year-long deep dive intensive trainings on that, where you're looking at your own stuff. Mm. So it's not just about helping other people with their energy blocks in there, but it's like in doing so, you really have a look at your own stuff. Mm-hmm. So like I went on that journey as well. And that really started when I was 33, my mom passed away. And that was kind of like a big bomb that went off in my life. And it sort of set me on this path of personal spiritual growth. I ended up training with an intuitive psychic for a couple of years while I was doing physio still. Very much for me, not thinking I would ever do that type of work, just more like a personal thing. And then it's just kind of, I don't know how many workshops, intensives, courses, trainings that I've taken over the last, you know, 15 years in that realm. But I wear two hats, physical therapist, and I'm an intuitive energy coach and soul guide. And I can't really pull them apart, you know, it's like who I am. And so I do bring a lot of what I've learned in that realm into physio now as well. So
cool.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a journey, right?
It has.
I mean, I think this is the cool thing is that, I mean, all three of us sitting here, our career paths have taken very non-traditional routes, right?
Yeah, and it started out very much that way. I mean, I have, you know, I got all the credentials. I've got my sports diploma and my, went through all the levels of the orthopedics. It was Part B back then
when I got
my Part Bs, you know, medical acupuncture, and I've got visceral training. And so I was very much on that kind of path, and I worked, was part of the Canadian medical team at a couple of Universiad games in Turkey and Beijing, and sports was very kind of my focus at that time. And it's funny to see that now my practice, as much as I love the sports, it's definitely deviated. Still in musculoskeletal. So I'm one of the few non-pelvic health therapists at Cura.
Yeah, that's right?
But that's, it really, even within my physio career, it has taken a different path.
So you left the career, you said. So was that because of burnout?
I think it was a stage of burnout. I think it was, I wouldn't call it complete burnout. I think what I refer to is like the early stages. And where I was at, the couple years prior to that, I had kind of lost the passion for what I was doing. It was one of those, like, didn't, you know, waking up in the morning, I wasn't excited to go to work. And I see this a lot in actually other physios that I've talked to and clients that I've worked with, is this sense of like unfulfillment, you know, and especially having done all the things, right? It's like, okay, well, I got this credential, and then I got this credential, and then I got this, you know, and I've done the things, and I've traveled, and then you just, it's like, I thought it would be different. I thought I would somehow feel fulfilled. And of course, when we're looking outside of ourselves to fill that, that's not the thing that actually does it, right? So there was a little bit of that going on. And also the year leading up to that, I had two miscarriages. And so just from an emotional, physical, hormonal, I mean, all that goes with that, right? And I was at, you're going to laugh, I was at an intensive, like a meditation retreat. And I just got this deep message, like, you need to quit your job. And it wasn't, you need to get another physio job. It was, you need to leave what you're doing. And of course, I had conversations with my husband around it. And we decided that, yes, this was the thing for me to do. And then a month after I stopped working, I got pregnant with my daughter. And I didn't understand how stressed my system was. So that was the main thing right there, was that, you know, when you're in it, it's so hard to know, right, until you're out of it to go, holy smokes, like, well, and I was stressed.
And that's
right?
One of the things, like, you know, just from my personal experience going through a particular situation, still going through it.
Yeah.
You really don't. Like, you, it's like, it, because it's like a fish in the water. The fish doesn't know it's in the water.
No.
So another fish goes, hey, how's the water?
Yeah.
And you go, what water?
Like, yeah.
You know?
In the water?
I'm in water?
Totally.
And so until you start to kind of pull out of it and you begin to see and feel like that sensual level of it as well, you start to feel how you're changing and shifting. Wow. Like it totally, you keep talking, but I'm picking up on what you're saying.
And it was very, when you've lived with chronic stress, which is now what I understand I was living with for many years, it's your norm. Like it's what, you know, I didn't know anything different. And we're talking from being like a kid because of, you know, we'll talk a little bit about patterns that we take on as children around that have to do with the beliefs that we take on as a result of our experiences, all these things. I believed that I needed to prove my worth through what I call myself a serial achiever, right? So it was kind of like, I need to prove that I'm worthy in order to stay safe and loved. And I did it through this. This was what I could do.
Through the achievements of...
Through the achievements, like all through school, right? Getting like top marks and valedictorian and all, just like all the things, right? Yeah. And that I had to excel. And so that pressure that I was putting on myself, and it was me doing it. It wasn't outside of me. It wasn't my parents. It wasn't like any of that. It was just me deciding that this is what I needed to do. And so that was my norm from being a kid.
But at some point, though, when you were a kid, you did get validated for it.
Absolutely.
You did get validated. I mean, your parents were proud of you.
Sure.
Your teachers were proud of you.
Sure.
You were singled out in some way. So it's not as though they were saying, well, you know, Glenda, in order for you to be of any worth, you need to be doing this. But there was that. You're going, I get what I need here. Yeah. And I become safer when these people are approving of me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, it wasn't like, I've also heard people who've had parents who were very like, you get 95%, where's the other 5%, right?
Yeah.
It's like that kind of, and the push and the whatever. Mine were not that way. In fact, my mom did her damnedest to get me to chill out. Like she'd even ask me if I wanted to stay home from school and hang out with her in the backyard in high school.
Oh, and you're going,
my mom wasn't that cool.
Right? I know, right? And she's like, it's such a nice sunny day because I'd come home for lunch. She's like, why don't you just, and I'm like, Mom, I've got a test tomorrow and I have a class this afternoon. And what if we cover stuff in this class that's on the test? Like just this kind of, but she did, like I said, she tried, bless her heart, to get me to chill out. But so it was that chronic stress that I had been living under for a really long time. And then I think just even like the traumas of my mom passing away and then right after, so 2 months after she passed, I was diagnosed with my first melanoma. And I've had 5 now.
Oh, wow.
I've had 5. So that, even though they have all been good and just removed them and no further treatment and everything's been fine, there's still like that stress, right? And that had manifested also in hormonal imbalances, in digestive issues, chronic neck and back pain, all the things. And then I eventually, this is years later now, had adrenal fatigue. So I did get to that point.
Mm. Yeah.
So that was kind of like leaving the profession at that point was early burnout.
Right.
And then the actual burnout, I would say, was 4 years ago, well, 2016.
Yeah.
I was working part-time as a physio and also doing my coaching. And being a mom of 2 girls. So all that comes with it, it's not just the pressure I'd put on myself as a physio, but then also a coach and also a wife and also a mom and also the daughter and like all the things. That was just kind of how I was playing the gotta get it right game throughout my life because I believed I had to, right? That kind of perfectionism that comes out. And so I was trying to do it all and do it all well. And so I ended up getting to a point and I actually didn't realize I was in it again. It was my mentor, Jennifer Huff, who basically said like, Glenda, like if you don't stop how you are being, you're headed down a not so nice path. Mm-hmm. And it's really fascinating because my mom passed away from pancreatic cancer at the age of 60 and her mom passed away from pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And there's apparently no genetic link. But when you look at the pancreas, it's, in Chinese medicine, of course, it's linked with the spleen and it's about worry, right? Mm-hmm. And it really is about losing, not being in touch with the sweetness of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that chronic stress mode, you're not in touch with the sweetness of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if I, like just this deep knowing was like, if I don't shift course here, I'm headed down the same path. Mm-hmm. Like I just had this knowing about it, And so she encouraged me. She's like, can you take a month off? Can you just...
No.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But honestly, I was so stressed at that point. I had reached that bottom point of like, okay, I need to. And realizing that I had to. Like, I was just at that point where I had to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. I mean, I would be resting. I'd be relaxing, just lying in bed. And my nervous system was like... so incredibly agitated and revved up, right? So completely dysregulated. And it felt like I wanted to crawl out of my skin. And I'm like, what is going on? Like I am relaxing here. Like, yeah. I'm not doing anything.
Like, for all intents and purposes, right? Your, like, your should be yeah. a nice, calm
yeah.
state.
Yeah. yeah. But I also was at a point where, like, when I first went through those early stages of burnout years before, I was so not in touch with my body. Mm-hmm. I was literally like a head on a stick yeah. walking around. I was not in touch with how I was feeling. I didn't want to be in my body, quite honestly. Yeah. I don't want to be with the pain that I'm feeling. I don't want to be with this, you know, all the dysfunction that's going on. And so I literally would be like, nope. So then to literally slow down and give yourself that time to be in touch with, oh, wow, holy crap, this mm-hmm. is what I'm feeling. This is what's going on. And it was really uncomfortable. Like I had to... because I wanted to just get up and move and do something, but I just forced myself, and then I came through it and I was able to get to the other side of that and go, wow, this is what it actually feels like. Mm-hmm. You're not this like state over here. So it kind of got worse before it got better. Do you know what I mean? In terms of my perception.
Yeah. Kind of what I'm hearing as well is that there's this impulse to do.
Yes.
To do, to fix, to do. So we talk about, you know, how we project onto our the people that we work with, the patients that we see, but also how that's kind of like, so all this is going on with you and you're going, okay, well now I'm going to relax. And that's even doing something.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, for
sure. Part of why here is to do something to mitigate this.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're noticing, well, even doing nothing.
Yeah.
And now I'm aware of just how I am being in this world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On a 24/7 basis.
Yeah. And I don't think it's uncommon in our profession, you know, whether we label it as type A, high achieving, whatever. I mean, even to get into the course is, right?
I remember it was like now 97% for U of A.
Right?
I was
like, what? Yeah, like it's just, it's up there. Yeah. I mean, nursing, I believe, is around 90%.
Yeah.
Even just, right? So, already we're already achieving high achieving. And so I don't think, and this is a general statement. I'm not going to say every physio is this way, but I think it's quite prevalent in our profession that we are doers and we are achievers. I know for me, that came from the belief of not enoughness. Mm-hmm. That was what drove me. And this was, honestly, I call achieving my drug of choice.
Yeah.
This was my...
Not coffee?
not coffee, no. I can't even drink caffeine. I was telling you guys, you can't drink caffeine because it's actually, I'm really sensitive to it and it revs me up. It gives me that agitation. I start shaking. It's kind of crazy. So, I mean, I worked in a busy sports clinic. Patient every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I was just seeing patients for 15 minutes. They would be there for an hour. So I'm like, it's like I got four people on the go. Yeah. And, you know, like it was, but that's what I knew. I didn't know any different.
Well, and that's what everybody else is doing.
Yes.
Well, so right, it's a culture.
It is.
It's a culture.
Yeah. And I mean, now, I mean, at Cura, it's half an hour and it's an hour for an assessment. So very different where I'm working now. And I don't know that I could work any differently. I couldn't, because of how I work now and connection is really key for me in treating my patients. The 15 minutes, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's this go, 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 this do, do, do. And I remember when I was recovering from the burnout and I had come to the other side and I was in a much more relaxed place. But then I was starting to incorporate doing some things back into. And I remember bursting out into tears. I was about to go to the grocery store. And I burst out into tears. And I just said to my husband, I said, I don't know how to do this without pushing. Mm-hmm. Like I was so used to doing with the push, this kind of like pressure push. And I said, I don't know how, like, I don't know how to do this. And in all his wisdom, he said, plug into some music and just... Don't go with the kids, first of all. You're going by yourself. And just see if you can enjoy it. Because I don't like grocery shopping. It's not one of my things, right? So, like, I'd rather not. So I was like, how do I find the joy in this, right? But he was right. And I wouldn't say I, like, really enjoyed it. But it certainly didn't take me out like it had in the past. And it was relearning how to incorporate doing things in my life without the push.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you feel like you're losing it and going crazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. You really do. Because you're so... when you're starting to disentangle from those patterns that you have run you for so long, there's almost a bit of even though it's crazy and stress inducing, it's what you know.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, it's your identity as well.
Exactly. It's what
into,
you know.
It's woven yeah. into who you believe you are.
Exactly.
Well, and that state almost becomes comfortable.
Yes,
even
exactly.
though it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yes,
levels,
it is comfortable.
It's comfortable because you're like, this is the place that I know.
This is what I know.
I even though these sensations are not good and I don't like them, it's like this level of anxiety or push or pressure, whatever it is what I know. And so that's, yeah, and then that's what you end up gravitating towards, right?
And the uncertainty of what is there if there isn't this?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There's and what am I going to find?
Yeah. What am I going to find? And there's an abyss.
Yeah. And who am I without these patterns?
Yeah.
You know, like really, who am I? And that's, you know, I always say to people, I mean, the coaching work that I do with people is really, it's about remembering who you are without all the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's first identifying what those are, because when you don't even have awareness that these patterns are in your life, you can't change them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that awareness, and then it's learning to disentangle from them and create new patterns, healthier ones for yourself, and then have the tools to support that, you know, and have the, like, I wouldn't have been able to move through that on my own. I really, without the support that I had. And so, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, this is what I want to help people with, because not only am I helping, and I'm, you know, I have physios as clients, other healthcare workers and teachers are another one, right? It's another group, right? Not only am I helping them, but the change in them is going to impact their patients. It's going to impact their families. It's going to impact the classrooms. It's going to impact, right? So it has this ripple effect. And so, you know, it's just become a passion of mine to really, to let people know there's another way. Because people who are really caught up in the do and aren't even aware that this is what's going on, it feels really hard. It feels hard. It feels like struggle. There's not, the joy does not live there. Fear is motivating everything. And I call that surviving your life. Like you literally are in this survival mode. You're operating according to the shoulds, have do's and musts, right? And you're just, I don't believe that's what we're here to do. You know, I think we're here to create and play and enjoy our lives. And sure, we're going to have stuff along the way, but this default way of being, that's, I don't believe that's what we're meant to be in. And so even just to let people know that there is another way, and having lived through it and knowing it myself and then seeing my clients go through it, you know, it really has just become a passion of mine, like I said, because I don't think we're supposed to live like that.
Yeah. But I think it's tough though, right? Like, you know, you're working full time clinically, you're seeing patients every 15, 20 minutes. You're in a bit of a pressure cooker.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that's hard, you know, and I know from the conversations I've had with even newer grads, it's not just the clinicians that have been practicing for 10, 15 years that are struggling with this.
No.
It's actually, you know, the ones that are new to practice that are actually feeling quite disillusioned, right?
Totally.
And I'm like, man, like, so what do you say to that therapist who's, like, cause I mean, it's always this, like, and I think this is sort of something that you know, you alluded to in terms of like, you were always in this giving stage. You had these expectations of like mother, clinician, daughter, you're mentioning this. And I think that that's the challenge, I think, as therapists, is that we always are trying to meet the needs of other people, trying to meet the expectations of other people, whether those are patients, whether those are employers, whether that's colleagues. Then let's not even, you know, like not forget about everything that's outside of work, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think that that's like, that's a tough, like it's tough to be when you're in the pressure cooker of seeing patients and giving and having to meet those expectations on a like day-to-day basis, right?
Yeah. And that you may not have a direct influence on the systems that are imposing that, those structures upon you, right? And so, so I know now, I mean, I don't want to shift gears too much, but you know, the idea of now within systems are looking not just at patient satisfaction and better outcomes and more efficient systems. They're looking at provider health and provider satisfaction, because they recognize that there's too much quote unquote burnout. And that actually you can't be with people and help them in a genuine way when you are in that state.
Yeah, you can't.
Right? And so so there's a lot of, like you said, Glenda, ripple effects of being able to have some semblance of being grounded within a genuine sense of self and joy in your work and what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and I know that, you know, giving, I also believe that's what we're here to do. and receive. So it's not just a one-way street, right? But also, it's never okay at the cost of your own well-being. That's what I've come to know. I used to give at the cost of my well-being. Now, it's like, no, if it's depleting my tank, if it's draining me in any way, that is not... Like, I'm not able to show up fully. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to give in the way that I want to give, you know, say give from overflow, right? If you get down to, and you're operating on fumes at the bottom of the gas tank, whatever is you are giving is not full. It's not like all that, it's not quality giving. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even within religion, mm-hmm. right? There's just so many different ways that we take on this belief that unless you are the giver, unless you are giving and putting other people first, you're not a good person. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. These beliefs around that. And even within our profession, you're trying to meet your patient's needs. Mm-hmm. Yes, and your needs absolutely have to be paramount and have to be met, because then you can't meet their needs.
In the long term. Yeah, exactly.
You can't. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, even I remember the early days looking back, I remember being that new physio of like, gosh, you're just even like grappling with how do I do this mm-hmm. and just the constant questioning of like, do I know what to do? Do I, you know, this
right
whole,
yeah.
and then like
yeah.
focusing on what I don't know versus like all the things I don't know instead of what I do know,
yeah.
compounded with the people coming in so often. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't eat. We had no built-in food breaks.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go to the bathroom. Like I would hold it till I absolutely had to go because I was like, oh, I'm going to get further behind.
Yeah. Well, you had all that stress of that.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
To compound everything.
And it comes about staying on top.
Right. Exactly. It is.
That's what your whole day starts revolving around. It's not about patience anymore. And
yeah.
care.
I came to know how long 15 minutes was without looking at a watch. Like I could just tell you, oh yeah, 15 minutes is now.
Yeah.
Right. It just became so ingrained.
Well, and you talk about nervous system dysregulation.
Yes.
I mean, that is
right?
the epitome of
totally.
That, right? Because I mean, you're basically in this fight or flight response.
All
like you're,
the time.
And
yeah.
And I mean, your body is like not even able to do the functions it needs to do because
yeah.
you're like,
yeah. And then at the end of the day, you're in the staff room and you sit down, you're like,
yeah.
You start to do your charting,
and then you start
right?
Chart.
And
yeah.
you're like, yeah. So, and I worked the afternoon evening shift. So, I mean, many a day I didn't leave before 9 o'clock at night, right?
Yeah. And so when are you eating? When are you eating? When are you digesting?
Yeah.
All of it.
You're eating late. You're eating when you're done your patients. You're having dinner like much later.
Yeah.
You would maybe grab, you know, you'd run into the staff room, shove something in your face and for food partway through the day because you're about to pass out and then go out. Like it was just, and I would even do techniques on people that would hurt my body, but it's like, no, this is for the good of the patient.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, no, like that is not really what we're meant to be doing. And I think that there's several things that I know led to my, so here's the thing about burnout. You can be engaging in all the self-care things. So you can be eating well and you can be exercising and you can be getting your sleep and maybe even doing some meditating, maybe going for a massage. All of that doesn't matter if your perspective and beliefs are still about, I've got to get this right, I've got to put everyone else before me. So there's this idea, it's really this internal shift that needs to happen within you because, and here's the thing, self-care can't get you out of burnout. It's like when you are in full-on burnout, if you're in adrenal fatigue and you're dysregulated, it's kind of like saying to someone who's stressed, just calm down.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just calm yourself. Just breathe. No one wants to hear that when they're in that state. And it's the same with burnout. It's like, just do these things for self-care.
Once again,
it's the do. Right? Exactly.
It's
one more thing. Totally. And so the self-care comes in, and or you've got to find joy. Right? So someone's burnout. You've got to find your joy.
Just be grateful.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Find some gratitude.
Yeah.
Find your joy. And you're just like, what? Like, I don't have the bandwidth. I honestly do not have the bandwidth to focus on that stuff. So when you're in that really deep burnout, it's important to you know, for me, obviously I went through that month off. It may not be that for everybody, but it's just simply, you've got to give yourself the rest that you need. You've got to slow down. You've got to quiet. You've got to allow your nervous system to become regulated. And that also involves shifting your beliefs, which are driving your behaviors. Because you can change the behaviors, but if the beliefs are still there, then all of a sudden, then you're feeling guilty for not doing the things. Mm-hmm. Because you still believe you need to be doing them, but you're not. It was kind of like when I first started resting, I didn't give myself full permission to rest. It was like, okay, I'm resting because I've been told it's the thing I need to do. But inside, I was feeling guilty. I was beating myself up for resting. That's not true resting. See what I mean? Yeah. So it's like you can't, and your nervous system can't settle if you're berating yourself at all.
Yeah.
Right? So then I recognize, oh, wait a second. Okay. No. This has got to be yes. I'm full on yes to doing this, and I'm choosing this. And right.
And regardless of that, because there's also the interplay between our beliefs and the people that we surround ourselves with or the yep. environments that we're in. So like for me, I can say that and for 5 minutes I can be there, but then it would be like, you know, but so-and-so is doing this, but yeah. so-and-so is doing this, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. but so-and-so would never do this, or right. I bet you so-and-so could do this and this.
Yeah.
I bet you they're completely yeah. regulated and doing this, and I should be able to do that.
They are superhuman.
Damn it, I.
Yeah.
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 And, but it's like, what are you talking yeah. about? You have no idea about anybody else.
You
so
don't.
Now you're projecting all, no, I'm projecting all of my story onto somebody else.
Yes.
And making this person out to be
yeah.
the God that I apparently feel I should.
And then beating yourself up because you're
yourself.
Not that. And yeah.
yeah,
you have no idea what's going on for them, right? Like when I kind of fessed up this was going on for me, people were shocked. They're like, Glenda, but you're so zen. You're so
calm
and grounded, right? Like you're so, it's kind of, the analogy is a duck on water, right? So the duck is gliding along, but really pedaling fast
yeah.
underneath
yeah,
and you
yeah,
can't
yeah,
see
yeah.
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you just never know.
Hey, I just wanted to have a quick pause to introduce you to today's podcast sponsor, Soul. They're off-the-shelf moldable insoles, and it's the brand of insoles that I recommend to my patients and have for years. The reason I recommend them is that they're heat moldable by the patient, they've got a great arch support, and they come with options to help with different foot issues. It's really easy for customers to order, and when you refer them to Soul, they get free shipping and 10% off. Make sure to check them out at yoursoul.com/health-professionals. That's yoursole.com/health-professionals. All right, back to the show.
You never know experiences people have had, what's going on for them, traumas they've had, all sorts of things. And so, yeah, comparing is just, it's just pointless and just, but we do it.
But we
We're
do
human,
it. Yeah.
right? But it's understanding that that just doesn't help at all.
And I also think there's the idea of surrounding yourself with, also with, like, maybe as you, I think it's not linear, but you, if you begin to start to shift your beliefs about yourself or recognize that you need to do an inventory of that, like
mm-hmm.
you need to really get a sense of what is driving
yeah.
me. And also speaking with other people who are not necessarily going through the same thing, but people who are maybe at different stages or
yeah.
have a different awareness, because I think oftentimes, you know, you're surrounded, we're drawn to people like us
yeah.
in the states that we're in.
Yeah.
And so it just gets reinforced. So when we're in that place of, you know, well, I want to get out of this, but everything around me is
yeah.
holding me here,
yeah.
right? And so detaching becomes exceptionally
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
You feel almost powerless.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
like,
totally.
I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose my friends. I'm going to lose my colleagues. I'm going to
yep.
lose, like, the loss.
Yeah.
So it's like, whoa, that's just a little too
it's
scary.
It's too much, too scary.
Too
yeah.
much, too scary, too
yeah.
uncertain. I'm just going to stay here because
yeah.
this is what I know and it's easier.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's thriving is not about security and safety. It's about the unknown. Mm-hmm. It's about being, it's like expanding your capacity to be with the unknown, because we know that change is constant, mm-hmm. right? Whereas survival is all about having to know. It's all about staying safe. Survival is being driven by fear. Thriving is not. Fear is not the motivator. Love is actually the motivator for thriving. And it's about creativity, and it's about stepping outside of your comfort zone and creating something new that's never been created before. And it's about allowing your actions to be fueled by what you desire versus the shoulds, have to's, and musts or fear motivating you, right? So it's like being inspired by love instead of being motivated by fear. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. Yeah. And when I say love, I'm not talking about like, you know, cushy stuff. I'm talking about love in terms of what's in the highest here. What's in the highest for me? What's in the highest for the people involved in the decision that I'm about to make? Mm-hmm. So it involves love for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not just love for whoever, yeah. you know, it's about. So it involves, and some people are just at a really, have a hard time even accepting themselves, never mind loving. Mm. You know, I've had clients where it's like, it's too much of a stretch. I'm like, okay, can we at least go from not liking yourself and beating yourself up to just accepting, mm-hmm. and then maybe liking, mm-hmm. and then maybe, you know, then maybe sort of this loving, and then maybe this like embracing and real mm-hmm. embodiment of like, yeah, this is who I am. And so there's even different stages of that, yeah. right?
Well, and that would be quite a shift yeah. if mm-hmm. you could look at that, you know, even just in terms of your patient care, to say, I'm going to shift from this mode of performing
yes.
to a mode of loving mm-hmm. my yeah. patients, mm-hmm. which would be like, whoa, what's
yeah.
that all about?
Yeah.
Because we don't ever think about that, right?
Yeah.
Like that would take a, you know, that would be interesting to see, how does that change my clinical practice? And how does that change the interaction with my yeah. patients? If I can just even make that shift, right?
Well, and that's what the shift I have made.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that really led to my burnout and the stress that I was under. One of them is I was carrying, and carrying is a term, again, my mentor uses, and carrying is caring plus worry. So in other words, we have equated that if caring and worry go together, it's like, if I care about you, therefore, that means I also worry about you. Mm. Or for, right? And if I'm not worrying about you, then it means I don't care. It's all symbiotic. Synchronous.
But it's true. Like, I mean, I yes. think of this in my own patients, where it's, you know, you worry about how they're doing. You worry yeah. about maybe the outcomes they're not achieving. And then you put that on yourself. You're like, what am I not doing right? What am I missing?
Yeah.
And it just adds this whole other layer, which is interesting, because I remember, you know, going to a course, it was about sleep and everything, but they were talking mm-hmm. about one of the biggest drivers of fatigue mm-hmm. isn't actually loss of sleep, but it's no. actually anxiety.
There you go. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So if you can imagine, so I know what I was doing before, like leading up to the burnout, was I was carrying my patients. So when you have so many patients in a day and you're carrying all of those, and then I was carrying my kids, and I was carrying my husband, I was carrying my brother, like, you know, like all the people in my life. And carrying also means taking on the responsibility for their well-being. Mm. In other words, if you're not happy, it's up to me to change yeah. that.
What song and dance do I have to do to make you happy?
Exactly. This whole kind of people-pleasing yeah. thing. And that's what caring really is about. And it wasn't until I learned this. So I'm going to bring some energy stuff into this. Is if you can imagine that you have energy in your body, and you have energy in your energetic space. And let's just, I'm going to call it your bubble. So say you're in your bubble, which scientifically has been proven, the Heart Math Institute, that we literally have an energetic or aura around us, right? So I'm in my bubble, and let's say, Andrew, you're a patient of mine, and you have your energy in your bubble, okay? And we're going to just color my energy purple, because I like purple. And what color do you like? Pick a color.
I like orange.
Orange. Okay, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. All right. So I've got my purple energy in my bubble, and you've got your orange. Now, when we carry people, when we worry about them, it's from a good place. It's from a caring place, right? And so ultimately, though, what we're doing energetically is, when I worry about you, I'm taking some of my purple energy and putting it in your bubble. Okay. So my energy is like being, some of it is like over here with you the minute I worry about you. So it's not in me, first of all. So you can see how that would be depleting for me, because now my energy is not in me. It's like over here with you. In addition, what's happening is I'm taking up space where your energy could be, because all of a sudden my energy is in your field. And when someone else's energy is in you, in your field, it doesn't feel good because it's not yours. Mm-hmm. It feels like a foreign entity almost, right? So A, that's not going to feel comfortable. And on an energetic level, the minute I worry about you, what you are going to pick up, whether you're conscious of it or not, is me basically saying, I don't think you've got it. You need me. You need me to help fix whatever, you know, whatever the story is, because I don't believe in fixing. No one needs fixing. And so it's disempowering to you for me to be worried about you in that way. So energetically, that's what you're going to feel. So in the end, it doesn't help me, and it actually doesn't help you for me to worry. And the minute that I learned that, I was like, oh, wow. Because, you know, just say stop worrying about someone. But when you realize that actually, no, it's not helping. And ultimately what it is, it's saving versus serving. So I'm trying to save you in some way instead of actually what would serve you. Does that make sense? So, so it's kind of like, really it's a lose-lose. like I get depleted, and there's not room for as much room for you in your space. And also this energy of like, you need me.
Yeah.
That you're not a sovereign being that has everything within you to either heal yourself or to move forward or whatever it is. And so that has been a really big switch for me, is to not carry my patients anymore. And so my perspective, and you know, this happens in the medical field where the healthcare professional is kind of up on a pedestal, and the patient comes in and they hand their power over to us and say,
Fix me.
Yeah. Right. And I'll tell you, as a young physio, my ego loved that. I was like, yep, I'm the one. I'm the awesome one here. And now it's like, that to me is not what, like, this is the shift that needs to happen within healthcare, is we're side by side. Like, I'm no greater than you are as a being, right? It's like, you have a divine spirit within this human body, as do I. You're not more of a spirit. I'm not more of a spirit. We're just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are side by side. And so I'm very clear with my patients now. It's like, I'm here to be side by side with you. We're going to try some things. And if they start handing their power over to me, I gently hand it back and say, right? And it's really this taking this self-responsibility as well. So I don't allow that anymore. I don't allow myself to be put up on a pedestal, and I don't allow them to hand their power over to me. And I'm very clear that this is how I'm approaching it. Are you game with that? Like, is this what, are you on board? And that has really changed things for me, because now I show up and I'm just going to be really present and just do what I can. And if it isn't the thing, then it's okay. Right. It's like, I've had sessions with patients where honestly, it wasn't even what I did with them. It was the one thing I said, and I could feel the shift in them. Right. And it had nothing to do with their injury. It was something completely different. And so we don't know. It's like our beingness is what's being asked for when we show up with our patients. Yes, we're doing some stuff, but really it's about how we're being. And so that was kind of a big thing. And then the connection piece, and it's being really intentional when you're used to go, 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 and you're used to kind of like, it's up to me and I got to fix. What's really helped me is I'm very intentional that each time I walk into a room with the next patient, my intention is to enjoy myself. My intention is to connect with them. My intention is to not get into taking on all the responsibility and I've got to fix them. It really is like, I have to be conscious. It's a conscious intention right now, because until it becomes habit, right, you have to be conscious. This is like how you change, how you're showing up. And I've just really get that each of us is already the gift that we are. It's not that we have gifts. It's that each of us is a gift period in this lifetime. And you're being the gift all the time, whether you're with your patients, your family, your friends, in line at the grocery store with a stranger. It's your beingness all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I don't show up differently with my patients now than I do with my family. I'm just me.
Yeah.
And so it's really this being before doing. It's like really checking in and how am I doing and how am I feeling? Do I need to ground before I go into this? Do I need to do, I do some energy clearing too. And I'll just talk about that in a second. But, you know, it really is like this tuning in of, oh, wait a minute, I'm feeling a bit frazzled. What am I doing? Oh, okay, I'm caring. Let me let go of that. They're good.
Yeah.
They're an all-powerful being. I know that they're going to move through this. This is part of their journey. And I'm just along for the ride,
yeah.
You know? So that has shifted things drastically for me. And then the second thing that I've come to realize is we're all energetic beings, right? Everything's energy, including yeah. us. And I didn't understand how sensitive I was energetically mm-hmm. to taking on people's energies. And so when I would literally be exhausted at the end of the day, I would be in pain. I would have a headache, a tension headache. I'd be in neck and back pain. And I was only working a couple of days a week and this was happening, but it was every time. And I was like, what is going on? And I'd be exhausted. And I recognized that when I'm taking on other people's energies, and this is a way, like the whole saving thing too, is I can take on people's energies, take on their emotions, be really affected by other people's emotions. That was really heavy to carry around because mm-hmm. I'm carrying around stuff that isn't mine.
Yeah.
And so to even understand that, okay, wow, no wonder. And I was clueless. Now I understand, you know, the best way for me not to take on people's energies is to be fully in me and be fully present. That's what I've learned to do. And there's energy tools that I use on a daily basis. I've also learned energy tools to clear. And this is what I teach people, and to ground and to connect. And so how I feel after doing those is like night and day compared to if I'm in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this check-in of like, how am I doing? Where am I at? Mm-hmm. You know, am I breathing?
Yeah.
Right? Right. When you're in fight or flight, you're not even breathing, right? And so if you're noticing you're sighing a lot, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, that's another sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so those two things, taking on people's energy and also the carrying, were, I think, the main things that led to my burnout.
Mm-hmm. It's true, because you can do all the self-care
yep.
in the world. Mm-hmm. And then if you're taking on people's energy and you're taking on their worry and, you know, carrying things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you'll just sort of constantly be depleting on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Even though you're trying to fill this cup.
Yeah, you're just constantly trying to refill,
yeah.
right? Instead of just being this consistent mm-hmm. state. Yeah. It's like, okay, and I'd be able to like fill myself back up, but here we go again,
yeah.
right? And it's not even just from an energetic perspective. I mean, they've even talked about this in neuroscience with mirror neurons, mm-hmm. where, you know, you see someone that is emotional or they're going through a really tough time, and literally we can mirror and as if it's happening to us and feel it as if it's mm-hmm. going on with us. So even recognizing, you know, when I'm feeling off, my first question is this even mine that I'm feeling?
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, it's not.
Yeah.
And even just that awareness
yeah.
can start shifting things.
It's taking those small little moments
mm-hmm.
and just recentering, like that pivot that yep. you have to do, whether that's mentally, spiritually, physically, mm-hmm.
whatever it is,
and then be able to say, no, just changing course 2%.
Yeah.
And that can change your whole day.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
it doesn't have to be this big epiphany. It's just sort of this like, okay.
And it is a reset. It really is like hitting the reset button and just taking this moment to notice, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that, you know, when you're so used to push, it's going to take some practice to not do that. And the whole perspective thing, really like that's it. It's because stress is a result of how you are viewing something. It's not the thing itself.
Yeah, it's the perception. Yeah.
It's the perception. And so it really is this, how am I looking at this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for instance, if you have the belief that you're not enough, it literally colors the lens that you look at life, mm-hmm. right? It's like, not only are you enough, but there's not enough time, there's not enough money, there's not enough support.
It's always a lack.
There's not, yeah. It's always this like glass half empty, this lack. Mm-hmm. And as long as that belief is still running the show, things aren't going to shift as much as you try gratitude and as much as you try, like, yeah. all the things you're told to do or find your joy or whatever it yeah. is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. And that's, like, I just, it, what it's made me think of also is this idea of, okay, we're going to go full out, but I know I've got a holiday coming
yes.
up. And so mm-hmm. I can recapture or fill the glass or yeah. or refuel during that holiday, and then I can give her again.
Yeah.
Right?
And
it's
2 days
just like,
later.
It's just like this. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like, yeah.
It's like holiday? What holiday?
Yeah, exactly.
What? Did
yeah.
I have one? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, no, I don't know that, like, I think we have to get out of that sort of boom bust sort of, mm-hmm. you
mentality.
Know, kind of
yeah.
like, gotta do, and then because I'm going to have this space.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to be able to fill that up because your beliefs go with you everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I think that part of it too is that when you're in a helping profession, there is ample opportunity for drainage of your energy, right?
Yes.
I think that whereas like if you are working, I mean, not that there aren't stresses and other things mm-hmm. with other jobs, but I just, you know, having worked in various mm-hmm. kinds of roles before,
yeah.
you know, it's very different if you're working at a computer, working on, you know, where maybe your human interaction is limited, right?
Yeah.
Versus your face to face, you know, 4, 6, 7 hours in a row with people who are coming in with their pain, their challenges, mm-hmm. the emotions of all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's lots of opportunity for that drainage to happen, which means that you have to be that much more in tune with how am I actually managing that?
Yeah.
Like, how am I stewarding my energy
yeah.
in a way that, like, the bottom just doesn't keep falling out of it.
Yeah, right? Totally. And I think, too, so this is where I kind of, you know, I may be a little out there for some people, but what I have really also come to know is that our body is the messenger of our soul. So what I mean by that is our soul speaks to us through our body. And how it does that is through physical sensation, such as pain, such as tension, dysfunction, and disease, and through our emotions. And so I have, even within myself and in some of my patients that I've worked with, literally seen pain disappear as a result of a belief shifting. So I think one of my frustrations too, as a physio early on, after 16 years, was I could only get so far physically treating someone. And I just knew there was more,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I just knew there's something else. And what I've come to know is that there is more. There are beliefs, there are stuck emotions. There's a lot of stuff within the body that is actually creating pain. And pain is our body's way of getting our attention. Right? So it's not just, of course there's tissue stuff, of course there's injury, and of course of that, but it's really fascinating when you start to look at, well, why did that happen? You know, why did that ankle get sprained? Why was I in this car accident? And there's kind of there's a deeper kind of perspective that I take in looking at it. I don't believe in randomness. I think everything happens for us. And so it's really looking at, okay, how was my body or my soul trying to get my attention here? And that I know is kind of really not what we're taught in physio, and kind of not the right. We're not taught any of this. This is bringing something new
yeah.
into it, but I can't tell you. I know, for instance, when I have a headache, I'm putting pressure on myself. That's my sign.
Mm-hmm.
Glenda, you're back into pressure mode. I know when I have pain between my shoulder blades, I'm carrying someone. I know if my neck is sore, I'm back in control mode. That's another safety pattern, is trying to control things. And it's fascinating when you start to, and everyone has their own pattern,
yeah.
but when you start to understand, it's when you start to put together, like I'm always asking people, you know, when did this pain start? And they're like, well, and especially when it's out of the blue, you know, those ones where there isn't really, quote, an injury or mm-hmm. mechanism of injury. And then I start asking, okay, what was going on in your life at the time, right? And it really, like, there's so much correlation between what is going on with us at an emotional, mental, spiritual level that is manifesting in the body. And so I think if we're just focused on the physical, then we're missing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why connection is really important for me. And I ask these questions, and I give them full permission not to answer. Like, look, if this is not something you're comfortable talking about, totally fine. But I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when you build connection, of course, they're more likely to divulge some
yeah.
of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I've even had them come back the next session and you go, you know, when you asked me about this and what was going on and I couldn't really think, well, here's what I mm-hmm. realize. And it's like, whoa, okay.
Right.
Right.
And I think we also have to, because I can hear some therapists saying, but that's out of my scope.
Right.
Right. That's not a part of what we do. We're not psychotherapists,
no.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we need to be clear that you're not necessarily trying to treat a psychological diagnosis.
Yeah.
But a part of what we are supposed to be doing as physical therapists, in terms of if we were following a biopsychosocial perspective or a person-centered perspective or a relationship-centered perspective, is that we want to know, we want to understand, you open up that question, and then they can step into it if they choose to step into it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not, you're not probing for something to, you're not trying to find something to link to so that you can fix it, so that you can make this link and you can come up with a solution.
Right.
You are opening them up to other aspects of what's happening in their experience.
Yes.
And allowing them, because if you take a humanistic perspective, that, as you've said, everybody has it within themselves to figure this out.
Yeah.
You are guiding that process or creating a space where that can happen for them.
Yeah.
And so it's not about you fixing something socially for them or giving them techniques to work with their husband or work with their kids.
Yeah.
It's not about that.
No, it isn't. It's literally about awareness.
Yeah.
Like bringing into their awareness that, oh, here's this other piece that's contributing. Because, I mean, you guys know, when you treat someone who literally walks in vibrating, they're so stressed and they're in pain from head to toe. Like, are you going to get anywhere trying to, like, treat, I don't know, their shoulder or like whatever? To me, it's like, no, we need to address this stress part, because we're not going to get anywhere with your pain as long as that nervous system is in fight or flight, because the muscles are tight, we're in tension, like all those things. And so for me, you know, now to even I didn't recognize that when I was in my younger days of physio. And now it's like, I'm very sensitive to it because I feel it myself. And it's like, okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going on, and let's, you know, and I can help guide them through some meditation processes and stuff like that, because they have the training in it. But even just recognizing that this is inputting, and then they can get help from elsewhere if it's not in your wheelhouse. And by no means am I a psychologist, but just the coaching training that I've done allows me to have an understanding, right? And then to be able to help them have an awareness. But I think, and I'm not saying that every physio needs to do that, but I think there's more of this recognition of, wait a second, there's a lot more inputting into what's going on here other than just the physical issue, and bringing that into a person's awareness, perhaps having, I mean, we've got a list of psychologists, right, that we can refer to, or people to help in whatever realm if they're open to it, you know. But I think that, to me, recognizing that has been really big. I'll never forget, I treated a guy at Kinsman in my early days, and I think he was treating his low back. It just, you know, wasn't fitting the picture, right? It wasn't fitting any picture at all, and it wasn't getting better. And then he stopped coming, and of course I went, oh, you know, it was my fault. I couldn't treat them. I wasn't good enough, blah, 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 whatever the story was. And he came back the next year with a knee injury and to see me. And so I'm treating him, and I said, you know, like, I'm just really curious, like, whatever happened with your back? And he's like, oh, the pain's completely gone. And I'm like, really? What happened? Oh, I got a divorce. I kid you not. I got a divorce and his back pain went away. Right?
Like, I did not think of that as a treatment
plan. No, right? Yeah, totally.
And you would never have suggested it.
No, and I didn't even, of course, wouldn't even know what was going on in his personal life, right? But he literally had put that together. And I was like, all right. So in those cases where things are not making sense, be open to the possibility that there's something else going on that could be inputting into what's happening. I know for me, I don't get the pain that I in my body anymore. Like, I can go through a day of work, I'm not exhausted anymore, and I don't walk away with the headaches and the neck and back pain like I used to. And it's not because anything's changed externally in the clinic or anything like that. It's how I'm showing up and what my focus is on and my perspective that I have. And I'm going to help to the best of my ability, and that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, you know, we believe that we're, that, okay, well, I am a physical therapist.
Yeah.
And hence and therefore, you're stuck in this space of this is how you must operate and this is how you must be.
Yep.
And I think there's opening to the possibility, well, maybe there's other things on your horizon. Maybe this is, as far as your professional journey, mm-hmm. this may be a stop on that professional journey.
Yeah.
Or it may provoke you to make a shift and a change into the spaces that you want to work in. Yeah. And that's a scary thing, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of uncertainty there.
Absolutely.
But maybe a necessary thing.
But a necessary mm-hmm. thing. So yeah. I think we think that we get very cemented into where we believe we should be. And that this is what I am.
Exactly.
I am this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, for me, you know, I've been in and out of the profession several times now. And here I am back again. And I know that like it presented for a reason. And I feel like coming back into it again is a full circle for me because I now see, oh, wait a second. Cause last time I worked, I was still in that pain. Mm-hmm. I was still like, it was like three or four years ago, still in the pain, still in the like carrying mode. And now just having the shifts and the realizations and coming back and being able to practice differently. Mm-hmm. I knew that was part of my journey that mm-hmm. I needed to do. And now I get to help other people because yeah. I've had that realization and I've been through it. And now I know that, oh, okay. You know, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we've covered a lot of ground again. And I think there's a lot of good things that listeners can take away from our conversation with Glenda today. So that's, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
This is, you know, a different lens, different way of looking at it. And I think it's been very good because I think it's, again, as we've talked, when we started the show, I think we, you know, so many people are suffering, mm-hmm. struggling with burnout, and maybe they don't even necessarily recognize that they maybe are in burnout mode, but in this exhausted, mm-hmm. at least the first stages of burnout. And I hope that this conversation has given those folks maybe some their own shifts of perspective, right?
Yeah.
And tools maybe to start to explore that in ways that move beyond just self-care, mm-hmm. And looking at those beliefs, looking at the way that we are present in our interactions with patients, and not carrying the load,
of
our patients, right? And letting go of the worry part of caring and just being able to be present and engaged in our being with our patients. So I think that this has been really good. So thank you.
Thank you for being, you've been very generous with your experience and just, you know, it's a vulnerable space to be in, you know, but I appreciate that you've been so generous with telling us about your journey and also about the things that you've done and are doing to help others.
So thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. It's great having you on the show today. Now, if you've been enjoying the new show, I'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes, as this just helps more people find out about the podcast, and we'd love to get your feedback.
And if you want to check out the show notes from the podcast, just go to ignitephysio.ca/podcasts.
And if there's any topics that you want us to cover, just shoot us an email at hello@ignitephysio.ca, and we'll make sure to get back in touch with you and see what we can do there. So. Anyways, thanks for joining us on the show today. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.